Before we commence, we'd like to welcome tonight Brother Richard and Sister Anne and Sister Lois Bracey, and Brother Paul and Sister Yvonne Blanche are with us for the evening. We're very pleased to have your company. Now, to introduce the remarks of Brother Ron, we'll invite Brother Ricky Dodd to read for us, by way of introduction, Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 to 13. Ephesians 6, verses 1 to 13.
Ephesians chapter 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honour thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of heart, as unto Christ. Not with eye service as men pleases, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord, and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same thing unto them, forbearing threatenings, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armour of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armour of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand.
Well, those verses then are an introduction to Brother Ron's remarks tonight, and he's to speak to us on the subject, Teach Diligently Thy Children.
Mr. Chairman, brethren and sisters, and our dear young people. You know, Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1 is a verse which the humanist thinkers of this world hate. Because it says there in verse 1 of Ephesians chapter 6, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. See, there is an absolute value that God has laid down, is that children should obey their parents. There's no reasoning, there's no argument needed. There's an absolute value which is abhorrent to those who would preach humanism to our children, because their primary attack is to remove children from the influence of their parents. You know, the battle for the minds of our children is very much underway at present. Never before has the heritage of God been under such relentless pressure as is being exerted upon our children from many quarters, and particularly from our education system. And today you're not just fighting the occasional Christmas decorations or the theory of evolution in the schools. It's much more than that. You are fighting for the minds of your children against a persistent, aggressive and subtle enemy. And that is humanism in high places in our education system. I don't have any direct knowledge of the Tasmanian school system. I know quite a bit about New South Wales, a bit about Victoria, and an awful lot about South Australia because I have to live there. You may well be behind South Australia here in Tasmania. But if time goes on, brethren and sisters, you will not escape the tide of humanism that is sweeping through the world and particularly through Australia at the moment. The Director of Education, Ken Boston, who did so much damage in South Australia, is now Director of Education in New South Wales. They're going to be getting the same stuff that we've had for the last 15 to 20 years. Humanism. brought into the school place under all kinds of educational systems. And as I stand here before you tonight, I'm very aware that I'm also a parent of teenagers who have some way to go in their development in the truth. And believe me, with reluctance, I stand here and tell other parents what to do with their children. But I do stand here, brethren and sisters, as a concerned parent and as an observer of young people. And I'm fearful of what I see already coming out in some of our young people, and of what could happen if we don't fight back adequately against the tide of humanism being taught in our schools. This is not a political talk tonight. Both sides of politics are as bad as each other, so don't take it as though I'm against one party or the other. Nor am I here to advocate any particular type of schooling, homeschooling, private schooling, or Christadelphian schools. What I'm here to do is to try and achieve in you the vital element that we all need wherever our children are taught in this world, and that is vigilance. To try and wake us up, perhaps, to look more closely at what's happening with our children's education, to know what we're up against and how we can fight it. And we are at war, brethren and sisters, in our school system. You know, once there was a time when school reinforced the home, and home reinforced the Bible, and there was a consistent line of authority that our children grew up with, an accepted morality that was agreed by everybody to be basic and good and decent. But today, when your little child, at 5 years of age and sometimes younger, goes out the gate of your house, that child is up against hostile forces who don't have the same values and authority line that you have taught that child. And our children spend a third of their young lives in the hand of the world. And because they are young, they're impressionable, and they're very vulnerable to what adults tell them. You know, we train our children from the time they come out of the cradle to pay attention to what adults have to say. We want them to listen to us as parents. We want them to listen to their Sunday school teachers. How is a 5-year-old to know that when he gets to school that adult could be dangerous? How is he going to pick out that there's subtle undermining of what he's already been taught coming across from the teacher at school? You see, children don't have the experience of a number of years. Those of us who are older can look across 20 or 30, 40 years and say, haven't things changed? Haven't the values of society gone downhill? But a child can't do that. A child only knows the last few years of his experience. To a child, everything that's happening around them today is the real world. They can't compare as we can and see how things have changed. And therefore they're very vulnerable because they think this is the way it's always been. The world knows how vulnerable they are. You know, we're going to see tonight that the world understands fully that the children are the best target to get across the message of humanism. You know, the number one tactic of the world in attacking our children is to undermine their dependence upon you for guidance and for values. Let me read to you the words of our Equal Opportunity Commissioner in South Australia, Josephine Tiddy. This is from the preface of the South Australian Sports Policy for Schools. She said this in the preface that she wrote for the Sports Policy for Schools. It is realised that it may not be possible to change the values of older generations, but by starting in the schools, we can ensure that the next generation is free from the prejudices of its forebears. You see, they know where to attack to change things in society. If you get at the values of the children, the next generation can be free from the prejudices of their forebears. In other words, the things that we try and inculcate in our children from a very early age are being undermined. And we have a war on our hands, very much so. Paul says in Ephesians 6 and verse 11 that we have a war on our hands. And as we said this afternoon, Paul spent 5 years chained to a soldier. He saw their training, their skills, their discipline, their preparation, their teamwork. And he saw his life as a spiritual struggle against outside forces. You know, the military routines that Paul observed around him were the most common metaphor he used in his writings. Where he spoke about spiritual warriors, the weapons of our warfare being not carnal, about fighting the good fight, soldiers being prepared to carry their pack, soldiers being disciplined and well trained. All of that came out through Paul's writings because he saw in the soldier that there was the spiritual warfare we have on our hands. And so he says in verse 11, put on the whole armour of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. You know, in verse 12 he said, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. You know, here was a man that had been 5 times beaten. A man that had been stoned, mobbed, and finally was beheaded. And yet he said, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. He was a man that had been violently assaulted time and time again. But that was nothing compared to the struggle that he was having with his mind. That's not the real fight, said Paul. That's a sideshow. The real fight of life is wrestling against the influence of the world. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. The rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. You know, the Lord Jesus Christ said, fear not them that can kill the body, and after that they have no more that they can do. Rather fear him that destroys our hope of life. And the real enemy are the influences that seek to destroy us from without. He terms it in verse 11, the wiles of the adversary. The Greek there has the deceitful stratagems of the enemy. Or as the Diagogue has it, the crafty ways of the enemy. You see, we have to arm ourselves against the crafty ways of those who are seeking to destroy us and our children. And the reasoning of the serpent has always been cunning and plausible, and easily swallowed by those who were not wary. And you see, we have a fight on two fronts. We have a fight from within. But we also have a fight from without, with institutionalized serpent thinking. With man-centered values replacing God-centered values. You know, the Diagogue says for verse 12, we wrestle with governments, with authorities, the potentates of this darkness, with the spiritual things of wickedness in high places. And so we do, brethren and sisters. We wrestle against those things every day. And so do our children. And in verse 13, he comes back to the way we can combat it. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armour of God. All of it. That you may stand and withstand in the evil day. You see, if we withstand in the evil day, if we keep at bay the forces of the enemy, then we will in the end stand approved before the Lord Jesus Christ with our children. And he goes on to outline the spiritual characteristics that make up the whole armour of God. But if we're going to successfully combat the enemy, we must understand the tactics of the enemy. And that's why tonight we want to talk about the way that they are getting to our children. And then we're going to talk about how we can fight it. Now this afternoon we defined humanism for you. Let's just reiterate what humanism was all about. Number one, they believe that man is not natively depraved. In other words, that man is basically a good creature. Secondly, there is no eternal future to worry about. The good life here and now is number one principle. Thirdly, that man can overcome all his problems by human reason and that there is no authority outside of human experience. We see from that, of course, that humanism is a very deadly poison. And we have to be very much aware, brethren and sisters, that the school is the major battleground upon which this battle against the tide of humanism is going to be fought. The ethics that arise from humanism, of course, we also saw this morning. Let's just go over this one again in particular. Moral values, and of course that's the major area that our children are affected. We affirm that moral values derive their source from human experience. Ethics is autonomous and situational. I want you to notice that word because we're going to come back to that later on. In other words, the situation you find yourself in determines the ethics. Going down to the bottom, happiness and the creative realization of human needs and desires, individually and in shared enjoyment, are continuous themes of humanism. We strive for the good life here and now. That's the principle of humanism. And you see, it appeals very much to the flesh. And it's very hard for young minds to sort out the wheat from the chaff in this area, particularly when you see the way that it's presented. And they don't just front children up when they get to school and say, we're going to teach you humanism. What we're also up against here is what is called Fabianism. And this is the way the message is got across to children. We've got to realise that we live in a society that has, at the moment, Fabian socialists teaching our children. Now, Fabianism is a word you might have heard of. I want to just explain something about Fabianism. Fabian was a Roman general. See there, his name was Quintus Fabius Maximus Viracosus. He being called, this was his title he was given, Comptata, which in the Latin means the delayer. And that what he was recognising was that Fabian was a man who never met his opponents head on. What he would do was, when a battle was there, he would have guerrilla attacks upon his enemy. He would withdraw away. And he would eventually overcome the forces against him by gradual guerrilla tactics overtaking them. Because he was so successful against superior forces, he became synonymous with the principle of gradualness to achieve victory. So we have in our society what is known as the Fabian society in Australia. And the principle of the Fabians is that they want to introduce humanism into society. They recognise that in the past, men like Marx brought in communism and socialism by revolution. But they don't think it'll work in Australia. What they want to do is to bring in their humanist principles by a gradual takeover of society, starting from the bottom up. And the most notable Fabian socialist today is our Foreign Minister, Senator Gareth Evans. And there are some of the comments that you can get from Gareth Evans. My party is committed to the international humanist values of the United Nations organisation. Children want a right to sexual freedom and education and protection from the influence of Christianity. You see, that's the kind of individual that are running our governments. And Bob Hawke, of course, even though he's no longer in power, but when he was Prime Minister, he said this: the classic concepts of Fabianism, the inevitability of gradualness, represent an unchanging truth and a fixed principle of the Labour Party. I gladly acknowledge the debt of my government owes to Fabianism. You see, that's the sort of wickedness we have in high places. A determination to replace all things that have to do with Christianity and with God and with true values with the principles of humanism in a gradual, concerted, consistent attack. And how do they go about it? Well, they do it by attacking the children. This is the New South Wales Minister of Education in 1987. Children are not the property of parents. Our society has asserted itself and is the responsibility of Parliament to protect the rights of these children. The state has a sacred duty to enforce those standards. You see, we have politicians in this country who are saying in all sincerity, as they believe it, that children are not the property of parents. It is the state's prerogative to take those children and to teach them. And yet the Bible says in Ephesians 6 verse 1, children, obey your parents, for it is right. And we have a conflict, don't we, between that and what the world is saying. The world is saying, children, obey the state, for we know better than your parents. And so we've got a fight on our hands. And for those who teach in our schools, many of them follow humanist principles. It's peppered all the way through the courses they have to do to become teachers these days. And here's the way the humanists see it. I want you to notice, as you read this, that the humanists think they are at war. You might be sitting there thinking to yourself, well, it's not as bad as that. We're overstating the matter. Will you read the way they see that they've got a battle on their hands? They think it's a war. And if we sit back and think we haven't got a fight on our hands, well, then it's a one-sided fight. I am convinced that the battle for humankind's future must be waged and won in the public classroom by teachers who correctly perceive their role as the proselytes of a new faith, a religion of humanity that recognises and respects the spark of divinity in every human being. These teachers must embody the same dedication as the most rabid fundamentalist preachers, for they will be ministers of another sort, utilising the classroom instead of the pulpit to convey humanist values. The classroom must and will become an arena of conflict between the old and the new, the rotting corpse of Christianity and the new faith of humanism. You see, they're quite convinced they've got a war on. I wonder if we see it that way. And more as society goes on, the teachers that are coming out of the teachers' colleges are full of this sort of stuff. Of all the social changes that ought to be made. And they're impressing these things upon our children. Here are some of the methods that they use in the classrooms. We're going to go into these a little bit later on and just discuss a few of them, but some of the methods. I want you to notice the fine-sounding names that they have for these things. You know, one of the things about the current system of education is that they teach theories and philosophies as facts. In South Australia, the major curriculum policy document in the education department is called Educating for the 21st Century. Sounds very good. The two major elements of that policy are social skills and health and safety. Again, sounds all very good. And that's one of the things you'll find about humanist education curriculum, that they put such lovely sounding titles on things that unless you're very vigilant, you might think that it's doing your child a lot of good. When they say social justice and social skills, they mean equal opportunity and rights. When they talk about health and safety, they're talking about morals. So be very careful when you hear nice-sounding titles put on education. And here are some of the things they use. Moral dilemmas, situational ethics, values clarification, moral biographies, personal development courses, man, a course of studies, and values voting. Sounds fairly innocuous. Well, you wait till you hear what some of those things contain. But they are built into the courses, particularly the social science courses in our education systems today. Just take life skills, which is one that we have in South Australia. You know, life skills sounds like it teaches children a lot of important things. What they're actually doing is teaching children to be independent from their parents. The course involves teaching children their rights at law. In other words, how you can threaten your parents with the social welfare department if they happen to beat you. How you can leave home whenever you want and be protected by the government. How you can stand up to authority. They teach children assertiveness. You have a right to be heard. You know, at a recent Bible school at which I attended, we had a girl who turned up at the Bible school dressed most inappropriately. And when one of the committee of the Bible school took this girl aside and tried to talk to her about her apparel, her response was demand. She said, "I demand that you call a meeting of the Bible school committee and I will tell them a thing or two." 16 years old. Prepared to take on all the senior brethren at the Bible school and to tell them a thing or two about their standards. And the greatest tragedy was that her father followed her around the Bible school compound, rubbing his hands and saying, "I can't do anything with her. She's a very headstrong girl." Where she got that from? You see, she's been taught life skills. She's very assertive. She has a right to be heard. They teach the children how to use the welfare system, how to get rental allowance, how to stand up to their parents if their parents don't agree to the things they would like to do with their leisure time. You know, at 10 years old in South Australian schools, children in the public schools are taken out and they are taught how to shop for themselves. You can go to the central market and see them walking around in classes with clipboards, being taught how to shop for themselves. And the government provides paid counsellors to ensure that when children want to leave home, they can get all the welfare benefits they're entitled to. At the local high school that's just up the road from my house, 50% of the Year 12 students are not living at home anymore. And the government is paying their rental allowance and giving them food vouchers. And you see, they are taking children away from the influence of parents. So life skills is all about how you can leave home and how you can stand up to mum and dad. Just be aware. It sounds like it's all very good. But the underlying message is training children to be independent from their parents. Discrimination studies, of course, are all about equal opportunity, about feminism, and about open morality. You have the right to be what you want to be. We have several brethren in South Australia who teach at high schools. Recently at the school at which Brother Andrew Johns teaches, who's the recorder of Cumberland, a high school, unannounced, some senior people from the education department arrived at the school and took all the girls away in years 9 and 10, took them and locked them away in a room for 3 days where feminists spent time firing those girls up with their rights for equality. No male teachers were allowed in the room, nor male students. The male teachers were not allowed to know what was being taught to those girls. All they know is that when those girls emerged, they were unmanageable. And you see, that's the problem when you've got a humanist government running your education system. And what is put in front of the children is what is called in South Australia the Fair Go series of leaflets. And these cover the whole range of issues given out as standard education material to our children. All about equal opportunity and your rights. The story, of course, is you can be anything but moral. Anything you like. And then we have the children's sport policy. See what it says then? There is a need to liberate boys and girls from the stereotypes our culture applies to them. And so children are encouraged to not worry about whether they're male or female, or even to be good at anything. Who was the winner? Nobody. Winner? Doesn't matter anymore if you're a winner or a loser. See, they're preaching mediocrity to our children. And this is the official document that's distributed to schools on how they should implement the sport policy. Who's winning? You see, girls are playing football now. You're not allowed to have boys-only teams anymore in public schools. If the girls want to play, they can play. Who's winning? We're equal. You get the general thrust of the information that's being put in front of the children. And if you want to get into a really scary area, and I'm not going to be very specific because I hate talking about this sort of thing, we come to the matter of sex education in schools. You can get the message for yourself. The recent scare on the AIDS virus in Australia has given the education system the ammunition it needed to take over from parents the right to teach what they like in our schools. And when they teach our children what to do about AIDS, they don't get up and preach chastity. They don't get up and preach abstention. They get up and preach how you prevent the getting the disease. And there have been some horrendous examples of children unannounced being assailed by this sort of information in schools. There was a time once when they sent a letter home saying this is going to happen and you had a chance to pull your kids out. Not anymore, it just happens. And then we come to some of the classic tactics. Personal development courses. Sounds good, doesn't it? Personal development. It's full of the same poison. Let's discuss some of the issues that are in the personal development course. Values clarification. Now, the idea of values clarification really is to confuse values. You have things put before your children like moral dilemmas. You know, the old survival scenario, the boat's sinking. You've got to make a decision. Who goes in the lifeboat? And you've got an Aboriginal, you've got a Vietnamese, you've got a homosexual doctor, and you've got so-and-so, and you've got a young person, all these different people. And you've got to make a list who goes into the lifeboat first. A moral dilemma. And the children sit around and they discuss who will go into the lifeboat and who won't. And at the end of the exercise, the children ask, well, what's the right answer? And the right answer is there is no answer. What they are doing in the exercise is making them look at their values and their prejudices and to debate them one with the other. But there's no answer. Another one, which is a horrendous example, and again, I don't mention this with any pleasure. I mention it because it's well known amongst our schools and the New South Wales schools. And that is a scenario that's painted that a particular boy is kept captive on an island by some criminals. And the girl needs to get across there to rescue this boy before the tide comes in and he drowns or something like that. And the only way she can get there is by selling her virtue to some men who own a boat. So she does that, takes the boat across, and when she gets across there, the boy rejects her because of what she's done. And the children are asked to debate who's in the right and who's in the wrong in this situation. Was she right in selling her virtue to save his life, or was he right in rejecting her because of what she did? And you can see how confusing that would be to the average teenager to try and debate that situation. At a recent Bible school, when it was asked of the teenagers, and there were about 100 of them in the room, how many have heard of that example? 60% of the children in that room had heard that example or had discussed it at school. So we're not talking about a problem that's in one little school somewhere. It was widespread. So you see, what they're doing is forcing the children to rub their values one against another. And in the process, conviction is destroyed. Right and wrong is shown to be relative to the circumstances. And you can't be dogmatic that there's always a right and always a wrong. And that's exactly what humanism wants us to believe. It fosters an attitude of broad-mindedness. And absolute values are scorned and rejected. And you see, young minds are being coached to question everything, to accept everything. And by contrast, the Lord Jesus Christ, we know, as recorded in the scriptures, he loved righteousness and hated iniquity. There was a very clear difference in his mind between the two. We have a situation where our children are being encouraged to merge the two together and to treat morals as situational. Depending on the situation determines the morals to be applied. Another method is moral biographies. You know, they take the life story of a very well-known person and they teach the children all about this person. You think, well, that's quite good because these were noble, good people. Well, you take the story of Florence Nightingale, and they have chosen their examples very well. The story of Florence Nightingale, the lady with the lamp. And they discuss her career and her work. What a great personal sacrifice she made to go to the Crimean War. Who came from a rich home but gave it all up to become a poor nurse. She reduced the death rate among the soldiers and brought in hygiene, set up nursing corps. A great example of self-denial and devotion to duty. And having built it up in the mind of the children, they then say, but do you realise that to do all that great work, she had to disobey her parents, who didn't want her to become a nurse? And then the question is asked, well, is it right to disobey your parents if you're doing a good work for humanity? You see, there's the cutting edge of that moral biography. And they did the same with the lives of a lot of great people. Karl Marx is another favourite choice they use. With all these revolutionary ideas. How he had to change the old order and strive against all the forces that were ranged against him. And the underlying message is that we have to be prepared to fight the values of other generations. If we want to achieve something for society. Innocuous things. You know, one of the favourite things used in New South Wales is the life cycle of the salmon. You might say, well, what's wrong with studying fish? Well, just this, that the major point that they make out of that story of the life cycle of the salmon is that the salmon can find his way out to sea, live out there for a number of years, find his way back into the same river, and he does it all without being anywhere near his parents. And they take from that example the inborn instinct of that salmon for survival. And the obvious implication is that we don't need our parents to survive. Another tactic they use is values voting. Where they get children right down into primary schools and they ask them to vote by a show of hands what they think about various subjects. And they're asking children firstly about very simple things. But the teachers can ask whatever questions they like. And when you read the teacher's manual behind these things, the questions often stray into areas of morality or into attitude to parents. A lot of the questions have to do with the environment. Who wants to save the whales? All the hands go up. Who wants to save the trees? Who wants to save the ozone layer? And the next question might be, do you think your parents are always right? So you see, they're putting doubt into the young minds. You know, we had a little case at Sunday school recently when a group of 7-year-olds were sitting there having their Sunday school class, and the teacher said at the end of the lesson, well, how can we please God? hand went up, little boy said, by saving the whales. There's nothing wrong with saving whales, is there? But you can see what he's getting out of school. It's coming through. The environmental approach is coming through. So watch out for values voting. That's something they use on very young children. Then you have situational ethics. I want to quote you some things, and these are actual examples from the New South Wales Department of Education. You know, one of the most common things they put into these situational ethics is a discussion on the Eskimos that were discovered in northern Canada in 1921. This tribe of Eskimos was found living right up in the Arctic Circle in incredible hardship and cold. You might say, well, what an interesting study that would be. No, there's a very good reason why they've chosen that. Because what they tell you about this is how the tribe lives and how they survive the bitter winters. And when they have a bad year and they can't hunt as much as they would like, the survival of the tribe depends upon the hunters and the childbearing mothers surviving. So what happens when they have a bad year and food is very scarce is the first thing they do is they kill the old people. Or they leave them out on the ice to die. If food is still scarce, they kill the babies. On the basis you can always get more babies. They kill the girl babies particularly, because the young men might grow up to be hunters. And as a result, the tribe can survive even the most bitter of winters. And that was the way this tribe had lived in their isolation for many years. And then they're asked to discuss the morality of this. If it means the tribe surviving, is it okay to kill the old people and the children? Now you can see the confusion of values that brings in the child's mind. It's a situational ethic, a dilemma that they have to try and solve. And the underlying message is, of course, that in given circumstances, anything is permissible. Morality is determined by the situation, not by God. As it says in the teaching manual for this particular course, what the teacher must get across to the child is that acceptable behaviour is a product of the culture. That's the aim of the course. That acceptable behaviour is the product of the culture. Now, I don't want to go on multiplying examples. That's just a few of the more horrendous examples that we've come across. What are the effects that has upon our children? Well, you see it in some of the children. You see an assertion of independence. They're being taught to accept nothing as absolute. They're aware of their rights. And they threaten to leave home. We've had two cases amongst our young people's group in the last 12 months of young people standing up to their parents and saying, I'm sick of the restrictions, I'm leaving, and you can't stop me. And if the parents have tried to stop them, the welfare intervenes. Where did they learn those skills? There are other parents whose children haven't left home but feel threatened because the children have warned them that unless the pressure is taken off, they can get help. That's happened. It mightn't be that bad here. I hope it isn't for your sakes. But we are faced with that situation. An assertion of independence. Questioning of authority. Children these days demand reasons for things. You know, when you and I grew up, for the older members here, if Dad said you did that, you did it. Now it's, why do I have to? And parents find themselves debating with their children about why things have to be done. And in their attitude, you get the subtle impression they think that parents live in the past. It's another problem, the questioning of authority. The expectation that they will be consulted and heard. As I quoted the example from only 3 weeks ago, 15-year-old saying, "I demand respect." As we said to him, you've got to earn respect in the truth. You can't demand it. And their values are being undermined. Equal opportunities being pushed at our girls in our schools. They are taught to be assertive. They are taught to despise maternal careers. Being a mother in the home, bringing up children, is put before girls in school today as being a most undesirable cop-out. A waste of their talents. Conforming to an outdated image. That's one value that's being challenged. And of course, morality. Children are taught to be anything but virtuous. And you see, our children are not only surrounded by teachers who are themselves quite often immoral, but by children who also have indulged in the lust of the flesh as well. And that affects their values because they're very conscious of what their peers are doing. So those are the problems that we're having. Those are some of the problems that may come to you in time, if they haven't already. Let's talk about how we combat these things and how we can be aware of them. And there's two things we have to do. Be vigilant, to know what the enemy's doing, and to prepare. To make sure that we've got the whole armour of God ready in our lives. And that we've got the answers for our children to the things that they will come home with. Sometimes the answer will be no more than God says so. But we've got to have them know what the right values are. So let's talk about being aware. Here's some of the things that we can do. Be aware of what's happening at school. It's in your interest to try and find out something about humanism and the way that it's taught. It's no good anymore pretending it won't happen. No good thinking that what your children are getting at school is what you got at school. We have a war in our hands, brothers and sisters, and we have to be ready for it. We have to make sure that our children know what the values they stand for are and why. We've got to make sure they understand the principles of the Bible stories we teach them. So they've got something in their head to combat it with. Prepare our children for the environment at school. Talk about what they're going to come across. And if they're going to high school, make sure we understand which subjects they're doing. And teach them to prioritise and balance their time. So they've got time for the things of the truth as well as the demands of education. The world is taking the attention of our children. And in South Australia now, of course, you're virtually forced to go to Year 12. If you want entry into university, or even for most jobs, you're forced to do Year 12. Which means our children are still struggling through mountains of schoolwork between the years of 17 and 18. At a time when, by experience, we know that a lot of young people are developing a very strong conscience for the truth. And they are torn two ways between the demands of school and what they know they ought to be doing with the truth. They're under a lot of pressure in those years. So we've got to be careful in how we teach them to balance and prioritise their time. And the other thing we must do is to debrief our children. You know, if any bit of advice you take from me, it's this. make sure we debrief our children. It's primarily, perhaps, the role of the mother. It's why we believe, brethren and sisters, that mothers should be in the home when the children arrive, home from school. And we've got to teach our children to be prepared to come out and to tell us the things they have heard. There's got to be confidence developed between parent and child so the children can relate those things without feeling at threat. That the parent won't just react and go off the deep end. And sometimes you've got to spend a lot of time listening to the small things that have gone on at school. Perhaps what they had for lunch or who they played with or what the teacher said about this. But keep your ears open. Because if you develop confidence with the children, that when they do have a problem, they will come to you and hopefully let you know what's going on so you can deal with that problem. But if you're shocked and close the door in their faces, then they'll just go into themselves and they won't be able to handle it. And so we have to be very aware of what our children are going through and be prepared to debrief them. Encourage the avenues for your children to talk to the parents. And as a family, we should try and encourage the inculcation of the divine mind by reading the Word of God regularly, by involving ourselves in the activity of the ecclesia as families, by talking with our children, showing interest, listening and instructing with them. And don't dodge the issues. You know, recently I spoke on this subject in an ecclesia in the country. And a sister said to me, well, we don't have that problem up here. Our schools are different. And I said, you go and ask your daughter. Which she did. She went home and she asked her 70-year-old daughter, have you heard of any of these things? And she quoted some of the examples I just gave you. And the daughter said, oh, yes, Mum, we've had all of those. Her comment to me the next day was, I nearly fell under the sink. I went to the 17-year-old and I said, why haven't you told your parents? She said, oh, Mum couldn't handle it. And you see, the child was more balanced than the mother was, in the sense that the child had sorted it out pretty well in her own mind. But she didn't feel confident to tell the mother. At a Bible school in New Zealand recently, the first question in the question system with the young people was, I've got to debate abortion at school, what can I say? And I got this young fella afterwards and I said, you come from a very good family in the truth. Why did you ask that question here? And he said to me, I went home and told Mum what I had to talk about at school, she'd kill me. And you see, he's struggling with the dilemma of what to say or how to handle it at school, afraid to talk to his parents about it. Now, he might have been wrong about his parents, knowing the parents, I think he probably was. But you see, there wasn't a line of communication. So we've got to make sure we've got the answers for our children. Don't dodge the issues. Work out what you're going to say when the issue arises and make sure you've got the answers. And use the daily readings to enforce those principles of what God says about matters. And learn to talk with our children, not just at them. For parents, there are some other things that we can do. Not a time for despair. We've got to prepare. We've got to be ready to face the challenge. And one way we can do that is by looking at our own lives. Make sure we're setting a godly example for our children. It is no good telling your children that you want them to be this and you want them to be that and you want them to be this if you're not prepared to do it yourself. Children will follow what you do far more than what you say. They will pick up your attitudes to the ecclesia. If your home is a home where criticism of the ecclesia is made publicly in front of the children, then they'll grow up despising others. You've got to set a godly example before the children and be positive about the things of the truth and the ecclesia. A loving, godly home environment is what they need. Don't accept the world's values in your home. You know, be very concerned that our children learn good manners. You go and watch the children in the world and see what their manners are like. That they learn respect for adults. That they learn sacrifice and not selfishness. That they get the right reading material. They're not reading all the rubbish that society is pumping out today. Find the books that have got good morals for your children. And when you talk about the subject of books, you've got to be very aware these days of what they're reading at school. Because you mightn't realise that most of the school libraries have been totally renovated. You've probably heard that Noddy's gone and Enid Blyton's gone because of the stereotypes they present. Well, listen to this. This is England. An organisation called, they've rewritten the fairy tales, the normal fairy stories society has been used to. A book of fairy tales has been out called Rapunzel's Revenge. This is almost laughable. Cinderella sets up a women's cooperative and becomes a power-dressed businesswoman who dumps Prince Charming and starts her own company. Snow White becomes a workers' champion, organises the previously self-employed seven dwarfs into a trade union and negotiates a pay rise for the diminutive woodchoppers. And so it goes on. We can quote humorous examples. But you get the message. They're rewriting all the standard fairy stories. Goldilocks turns the Three Bears Cottage into a women's refuge. And so it goes on. But in all of them, are coming through the modern humanistic values. And be aware of what your children are given to read, particularly in high school. The books they are given quite often are full of very dangerous moral attitudes. Needless to say anything about the language. But they're given out as curriculum choices. So make sure that you read what is in front of your children. And make sure you know what's going into their heads. Now, we talked there about a godly home environment. I want to say something about television. I don't know any of you here whether or not you've got television. But let me just say this, is that television is the world's most influential media item. To those who have television, I want to ask three questions. Can you honestly say it doesn't affect you? Well, if it doesn't, the world's advertising multi-million dollar industry is a failure. Because you have a television, lead other peoples who can't handle it to follow your example. It's a question you might be asked at the judgment seat of Christ. Whether or not you having a television led somebody else to be emboldened to try it. And the third question, would you invite the Lord Jesus Christ to watch everything that you have watched? If you can't answer those questions in all honesty and sincerity, then get rid of the thing. You know, I want to give you a comment that Brother Harry Tennant made in Adelaide recently when he spoke on this subject. He said this, Christadelphians reject with great abhorrence the idea of fornication, murder and adultery. But it's amazing that some Christadelphians are happy to have their children watch it performed every night in the lounge room. You think about that comment and what you've seen on television. Now there's a verse in Romans, perhaps, that applies very directly to this subject. Romans chapter 1 and verse 32. Of course, the Bible doesn't talk about television. But let's read Romans chapter 1 and verse 32. Talking about the evil of society, the apostle says, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. And I would submit to you that a lot of what's on television is merely us having pleasure in those that do such things. Something to think about. Your children will be far better off if they're taught to think for themselves instead of having images projected to them all the time. They will get enough television at school without having it at home as well. They will learn to become far better amusers of themselves and to be more inventive and creative without having images put in front of them all the time. And they will not be soiled by the advertisements that they see all the time on the television. So provide for your child a godly home environment and don't accept the world's values in our homes. And let's reinforce to our children the very first thing we teach them from the instructor, that God is in heaven, he made all things and he sees all things. Let's make sure that we put into the world children like Joseph, who at 17 was sent out by God, taken away from a very close relationship with his father, who was subjected to enormous temptations at the hands of an older, experienced woman. And yet his father had given him a conscience, so that he would say, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And he was in a situation where there were no other Christadelphians around to see what he would do. And yet he said that he would not do that sin because God would be the offended party. And he applied the Joseph principle. Flee. Get away from those situations. Make no provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. And we've got to instruct our children to understand that their body is subject to temptation and they've got to apply the principle of Joseph, that God is watching. We've got to build that conscience into our children's minds so that they will act and have their own conscience at a very young age when they are placed in temptation. And above all, brethren and sisters, what we must do with our children is what the humanists of this world absolutely hate. And that is to shamelessly indoctrinate our children. You know, the whole philosophy of the modern education system is that the state has the right to take children away from their parents and to teach them what the state wants them to know. The thing they do not like us doing is indoctrinating our children. They will do everything they can to undermine your indoctrination. The answer is to keep indoctrinating your children. Don't be ashamed to say, this is right. This is what God requires. God requires you to be moral, to be upright, to be pure, to be chaste, to be virtuous, to be self-sacrificing, to be honest, to be pure. Indoctrinate our children with scriptural examples, scriptural principles, Bible characters, so they've got something in their head to resist what they hear from outside. And let me say to the grandparents amongst you, you have a similar responsibility to do what you can with your grandchildren. You're not irrelevant. You might feel in this computer age where children sit at computers and bang away on the keys that perhaps the world's passed you by. You're not irrelevant. to the older generation amongst us, you represent the stability and the dignity of the truth that goes back to an age where there were manners and respect and honesty and integrity and uprightness. And we need you there giving that example before our children, so they can see that there are people who honour God and value Bible principles, who are trying to follow the Lord Jesus Christ, and who can live simple, honest, dignified lives. And we need you to talk to the children and to tell them it wasn't always like it is today. So when you get to be grandparents, don't think your job is over. And the older members of the ecclesia likewise. Perhaps the children might treat you sometimes like you're irrelevant. But you're not irrelevant. You're very valuable examples. And we need you to tell that to our children. You know, we have a challenge before us, brethren and sisters, and we need to save our families. We've got to be very vigilant and very aware. You know, there was a previous generation that was like this one, and God buried it under a flood. Evil imaginations filled their hearts. They were corrupt and violent. And the Lord Jesus Christ said, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. And a whole generation of Christadelphians was lost in the years before the flood came. But this family survived. By faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house. And that's what we're doing, brethren and sisters, in our own homes, in our ecclesias, in our CYC groups with our young people. We're preparing an ark to the saving of our house. And let's support those activities with all our heart, because if we don't, then we're doing the fight alone. Your children need good, positive company. If you don't support the ecclesia, then where will they be going for that company? So get behind the things for the saving of your house. And he condemned the world and became the heir of righteousness. We have a challenge on our hands, brethren and sisters, to save our families. So let's not be afraid to shamelessly indoctrinate them in the ways of God. And to be diligent. You know, the man that says in the Bible will be the heir of the world. There's a man called Abraham. And he left us an example of what God expects from faithful parents. I know him, says God. He will command his children, not ask his children. He will command his children and his household after him. And they shall keep the way of Yahweh to do justice and judgment, that Yahweh may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. Now there's an example of parenting that was of vital interest to God and to the angels in heaven. You know, that was the Yahweh angel that said that. He was an angel sent down to the earth to tell Abraham about Sodom and Gomorrah. And the angel has this little debate with himself as to whether or not he should tell Abraham. And he says, I will tell him, because he will make good use of that in his house. In generations to come, he will teach his children and his grandchildren about the impact of the lesson of Sodom and Gomorrah, of why you should keep separate from the world. He'll use that well in his house. I know Abraham. I know what he'll do with the information, says God and the angel. Therefore, I'll tell him. And if you want the angels to think similarly about your family, then be prepared to command and instruct your children in the way of Yahweh. Be firm and decisive and back it up with Bible principles. Brethren and sisters, we have a war on our hands, whether we like it or not. The advice of the scriptures is to put on the whole armour of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. Don't let your children fight it alone. Be vigilant
Be prepared. And instruct your children diligently while there is time.